والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. Welcome everybody to the Safina Society Nothing But Facts live stream, where we are streaming on a gorgeous Wednesday. It's starting to get chilly. Get your parka jackets out. It was actually colder here than it was in Chicago, where I was on Monday, in which I filmed two episodes with the Dean Show with Eddie. And Eddie is a wonderful human being, mashallah. You just meet somebody right away and you realize this is a good human being, right? This is a good man and a good, done so much consistently with his show. So I loved him, to be honest with you. You meet someone the first time and you like them right away. That's on the Dean Show. So let's see when that'll come out, maybe a few days. Okay, two episodes we talked about. Today, we're going to talk about something that I think most people have never heard of. But I find it fascinating because you notice the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam did say, you are most like the Jews. Now, why did the Prophet say this? Is because we both have a book, right? So in one way, we're similar to the Jews, meaning we have a book, right? And that is a book of law, and it's a book of interaction with others, and it's a book of social order. The Christian religion is very individual. It's very much about your own salvation. It's not so much about how do we set up a nation, what kind of laws we have. So we're very similar to them. So I find in analyzing their world, I find a lot of similarities, but also a lot of differences. But the frame is very similar, and it's really a fascinating thing for me to look at. So today what we're going to look at is we're going to start to get to know what's going on in Israel. And I'm telling you, you got to keep your eye out on the group that we're going to be talking about. There is a group. They are essentially ISIS of Israel. I'm not kidding you. But ISIS, the difference being is that ISIS, they can't bring together all of their ideas with the Sharia. They cannot, right? A lot of their ideas do not jive with the Sharia. Hey, can you give me that bowl real quick? They cannot jive real well with the Sharia, okay? It's very easy to actually refute them. But with this group, okay, this group, I believe their views do jive with Judaism. I actually believe that they are their interpretation of Judaism actually is correct, right? Their interpretation of the Torah is right. And I know there are difference of opinions, but I've said this before, is that what I share from Yusuf Mizrahi, who we're going to get to later today, I think that is the most direct interpretation of their books. Of course, you're going to see a lot of people say that, hey, there's interpretations and there's different things. Yeah, blah, 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 right? Listen, when somebody says, what was the age of Aisha in Islam when she got married, right? You're going to have a lot of good Muslims say, oh, we don't really know. Maybe she was 18. Try to make it sound nice to everybody, right? But then you say, when you look at the evidence, like, come on, guys, right? She is an adult woman telling you she was engaged at 6, married at 9. If you don't, doesn't sit well with your stomach, that's between you and Allah. This is the truth, okay? That's the truth. She's happy about it, right? So I much more prefer the person who just looks at the truth as it is, okay? And if the religion is true, it should be. It should fit with you somehow. And you should be able to make comparisons in society and realize, okay, maybe my norms are subjective. My norms of things are relative to me, right? They're not absolute. Your norm of when a child should be married is no absoluteness to it. It's what you were born with. The society, I mean. It's the society that you were born in. Okay? So I much prefer people who just are not fake. They're not trying to wiggle around. But I do understand the need to wiggle around, by the way. Let's say a guy enters Islam and their mother has an issue with some really non-theological issue like the age of Aisha. I'm not going to go to the lady and say, oh, listen, well, you got to accept it. No, there's no point in fighting that battle, okay? You could say, oh, some people said she was 18, and some people said, so we really don't know. And it's okay, that's fine. I actually have no problem with that as long as it's not from the foundations of the religion. When you have a type of person that you're trying to just calm them down from, you know, being so upset. All right. When I'm looking at Judaism here, political thought, rabbis, etc., I see a strain of people and I see where they're getting their ideas from, and they are, I believe they're consistent. The problem is they're citing an outdated law, outdated by meaning abrogated. They're living by an abrogated law. As a result, it's going to end up in abject failure, absolute utter failure. It's a cancer inside of Israel. They will bring about religious war. I'm telling you. But they, within themselves, I believe they're consistent ones. They're the most consistent. Okay? Jewish political thought. Let's put that one up. And I'm here essentially taking from a guy named David Sheen. Don't know much about him. He's a journalist. Okay? Seems to me like a liberal Jewish journalist, and he is an expert on political thought in Israel. And he tells us that if you want to understand where the Jews are in terms of politics, what is their politics, you need to ask two questions, and it's going to result in four camps. What are the two questions he asks? I want to thank him for this video. It's so good. He says, the first question you ask, is the Torah from God, and is it just, or is it applicable? That's really the question. Is the Torah from God, and is it applicable today? And you're going to end up with four groups of people, okay? Those who say, yes, it's applicable. Yes, it's true. It's from God, and it's applicable. As it is, that's how you practice. This is how we are in Islam. This is the word of Allah. Then you got four madhabs to explain it to you. And you apply it, okay? And we have fatwa in our religion when things are impossible or difficult or the situation changes. So ultra-literalism is no good. You need fatwa, okay? But within the confines of the methodologies of the four schools of thought, okay? But they have a group of people that say, it seems like they don't really have that. They may have it. But anyway, yes and yes, they say. Yes, the Torah is from God, and yes, it's just and should be applied as it is. That's Rabbi Yosef Mizrahi. That's his teacher, who I'm going to get to, who's formerly the chief rabbi of Israel. His name is Ovadia Yosef. Okay? And we're going to talk more about this guy in the future, in a minute. They are the supremacists. Okay? What is their politics? One state solution, Jews only. Arabs killed out, remove them. They're Amalekites. Not get rid of every inch, every child, every sheep, every whatever. Okay, that's their philosophy, and I'm going to give you the proof right now. Okay, but that is their belief. Why? That's what the Torah says. That's what Deuteronomy says. That's their position. Now you have another group, which probably you can reason with them a little more because they're not totally, you know, cooked up in the head. And I say that because at some level, your fitra has to question, it will question things, right? Your fitra will question things. Sometimes something doesn't sit right. That gut is created by Allah. The Quran is the word of Allah. The world is the creation of Allah. The intellect is the creation of Allah. All four of these things got to match. Okay? So yes, you're consistent with your book, but it can't sit well with your gut. And that's the second group. And they say, yes, it's from God, but it doesn't sit right with us. We got to fix it up. And that's the bulk of the people. That's the bulk of Jews. The book is from God, but it doesn't sit right with us. Right? It's got to be reformed, modernized, okay? And that is the second group. They're like modernists or reformists. It doesn't sit right with their gut. And they're correct about that. It doesn't sit right with your gut because that's an abrogated text. It's a text that Okay. Yes, it was from God. It's been maybe altered, but regardless, altered or not altered, it's abrogated. What does abrogated mean for those who are just listening and learning these things? Abrogated means that God himself gave a law. Later on, times changed. The creation changed. He gave another law, right? Jesus, Moses came. David came. Jesus came. Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam came. Upon all the prophets, blessings and peace. The law gets abrogated. It gets changed. Even within the Quran, there's abrogation from the first year of the prophet's message until the last year. Things got abrogated in between to show us that things have to come in gradation, right? It's not just one, you know, a light switch that goes on. All right, we're all practicing 100% of the Islamic law. No, it doesn't work like that. Okay, so this second group, they're like, yes, it's from God, but those other rabbis, they're a bit cuckoo in the head. They go against their gut feeling that this can't be right. But instead of saying, hold on, maybe the whole religion is not right, is abrogated or changed or was updated, maybe Jesus was actually right, maybe Muhammad is right, is true, they say, let's change the law. Okay? And those are the reformists of those are the well-dressed political, probably Ben Shapiro's probably leans towards that, right? Like those Orthodox Jews that sort of get on in the world and they know how to get survive with people. Okay, these are the first group. They can't really integrate with society. Number three, the third group in Jewish political thought. Again, I'm quoting from a journalist, I think he's in New York, maybe Israeli too, but he's a New Yorker. And they say, no, the Torah is not from God. It's just literature. But we're going to apply it. It's useful to us. Who are these? These are the opportunists. Okay, and who does he list as the top example of that? Theodor Herzl. He's an opportunist. So it's not from God, but it gives us a good parameter of what to do. And it justifies us to go to Israel and make a state there. So this is the most intellectually incoherent group of all. Okay? It's not from God. It's whatever it is. But it's useful. And there was a sheikh. I talked to a sheikh. And he said to me that he lived next to... He had a neighbor who was a high finance guy in Boston. And was the man, he was one of the, not board member, what's above a board member is, above a board member in one of the biggest synagogues, Orthodox synagogues, above the board is the overseers. That's what the word I'm looking for, the overseers. He was one of the overseers and he helps them, guide them in their institutional aspect. So they're chit-chatting one day in the cul-de-sac and he says to him, listen, why don't we sit down and talk? Let me share our best practices. So he's looking at him and he's like, listen, man, I've seen you live. You don't keep kosher. I see you on the Sabbath, you know, doing stuff. How are you the overseer of this Orthodox church? Orthodox synagogue. He said, I got a lot of experience. I got a lot of money. I support Jewry anywhere. Jewry. Jews, basically, the Jewish Ummah. I support them anywhere, and I'm very good at planning, strategy, etc. I help them with that stuff. I show up, I put my kippah on. I think that's what it's called. I show up, the yarmulke, and I laugh. I don't believe a word they're saying. It's all a bunch of hocus pocus. But it's good that it brings us together, right? That's what's good. It brings us together. So what are these opportunities? Down the street of Livingston Avenue, MBIC is on Livingston Avenue. Down the street, there's a massive, massive Reform Jewish temple. And there, I was chit-chatting with some of the people. And there's like, some of us believe in God, some of us don't. But I'm like, what the? And they're like, yeah, but this is all, like, it brings us together, right? So these are the opportunists. And these people, you know, they'll show up at maybe some... interface stuff, but to talk to them is useless. They don't represent most of what Jews represent. Okay. The fourth group is mostly your Tel Aviv, New York Jews. Okay. Your Hollywood Jews. No, the Torah is not holy. It's just literature. And definitely not. We're not applying it at all. These are the completely, atheist philosophers. Karl Marx, probably one of them. It's not holy. And it's a bunch of nonsense. That's what they believe about their Torah. The Jews have a massive, massive, massive ridda, apostasy problem. Okay? And these are your homosexual Tel Aviv Jews, your liberal Hollywood New York Jews. Okay? So that's your four groups of Jews, according to David Sheen. All right? I'm not the analyst. I'm like a muqallid at this point. At this point, I'm a muqallid in my knowledge. I'm trying to learn here. I'm sort of interested. Now, let's now see how does this trickle down into real life? Because that's what's important. How does it trickle down into real life? Let's go to the next slide, which is a pretty big one. You can put, if you need to put it on the whole screen, you could. What is all these groups' policy towards Jews? Towards Arabs. Now, the first group are the nationalists. Who are they? The reformists. What kind of person is it? This intellectually... It's not fully coherent, but it's the most practical. Yes, the Torah is from God, but we're not going to do it all. We're going to use our brain and our gut here and do what we can of it. And this is the nationalist group, and they run 60%. And they believe in Judaism. They believe in the Torah, but they're just not going to do it all. Okay? That's like a lot of Muslims today. They're like, yes, Islam, yes, it's all wonderful. We're all down. I believe in it, but certain things I just can't do. I'm just not doing it. I can't do it. And that's totally haram for us to do. Now, remember, in the comparison, in the contrast here, they're quoting and they're living by an abrogated text. The more they practice it, the more they go down failure, the route of failure. Okay? Now, they believe in domination. It should be a one-state solution, okay? But Jews should have more rights than Arabs. These are pretty much very close to, if not apartheid. And that's your Benjamin Netanyahu types, okay? All right, now right underneath them and pushing and stealing from their base, 20% of the political offices in Israel are now, this is the scary part, this is where I'm telling you, this is the cancer. If this group keeps growing, you will have religious war. This is the group that stops peace. This is the group that shot up Baruch Goldstein, shot up the Muslims praying Fajr. This is the group of settlers. This is the group of crazies, okay, who they read the text. It doesn't settle with their gut, but they override their gut. And this is the supremacists. And these are they believe in a one-state solution too. But not with Arabs limited, no, Arabs eliminated, okay? And as we're going to get, who is their godfather? Who is the popularizer of this group? He's actually an American-based, and he died, of course, he was killed, and that's who we're going to get to, Rabbi Meir Kahana. We're going to get to that in a second, okay? We're going to get to him in a second, Rabbi Meir Kahana. He's the guy they all go back to. He's the guy. All right, who wrote his basically Hitler-like manifesto, They Must Go. He went to jail, just like, I think Hitler was in jail when he wrote Mein Kampf, right? Which was, My Struggle, right? My Struggle. This guy went to jail, the Jews themselves put him in jail. They couldn't handle him because most of the Jews were of that reformist Jewish, but let's be practical here. Let's be sane here, all right? They shut him up. They put him in jail. He was an extremist in the 80s. He went to jail. He wrote a book called They Must Go. The title tells you everything you need to know, right? So this group is 20%, and they hold their one-state solution, eliminate the Arabs all together with their kids, with their wives, with their sheep, with their shepherd dogs, if they have any, with their... everything. Kill them all. And I'm going to show you examples of this. And I'm going to show you where the books that they get this from. And I'm going to show you the biblical verses they get this from. And I'm going to show you the chief rabbi supported this and his lineage of scholars after him. Like a football coach has a tree, shiuch also have trees. Okay? The next group are very minimal. These are the Jews that we can talk to. But we can talk to, it's only on the surface level, because they're complete secularists. And that first group says, let's do our Israel in a nice way. Two-state solution. Let the Arabs have their own state. We'll do our Judaism nice and peacefully. This type of person is very, we can talk to this person because he is religious, but he's also sane and he's kind. And he says, let the Arabs have their own state and let us have our own state. And they're the most marginal. They're only 5%, right? And then there's another group, and that's, they have 10% of the vote. Okay. And they believe in also one state, but they're full-on liberals. These are the Tel Aviv gays. These are the nightclub types. They say one state, just like America, fully democratic state, okay? Fully democratic state, okay? Full-on reform. Forget all this Torah stuff. We're here. Let's just have a full-on democratic state with everyone treated equally, okay? And they only get like 10%. So the bottom two are only locking up about 20%, 15, 20% of the vote. Just to tell you where everyone's thinking. The top, that's your John Stewart type. Thank you, Chocolate Wallace says. That's the John Stewart. As I said earlier, the New York, Hollywood, and Tel Aviv Jews. All right? They're filming on the Sabbath. They don't do any Sabbath. They eat pork. They drink. Well, I think even Orthodox can drink. But they got nothing. All right, now let's go now to read to Rabbi Meir Kahana. This is the guy who really launched it all. And what is his deal? He wrote a book called They Must Go. Okay, Meir Kahana. This is the guy that you got to be aware of. His lineage of followers in any other sane society would have been put off the side. Your guys are extreme. You're radical. We need to put you in a closet somewhere, lock the door, make sure you never come out. Okay. But no, let me tell you about him first. He is the first, in the beginning, the Jews, the nationalist Israelis, the regular, you know, Jewish person wants to get along in society, called this person a criminal racist and his people Kahanazis. Okay. His radicals on the other said, he said he's a visionary, his radical supporters, he's a visionary hero of the Jewish people. Okay. This guy is a Brooklynite. He's a New Yorker. This is an American made guy. Okay. He's a Brooklynite. His dad was a rabbi, Charles Kahana. All right. As a teenager, he became militant. Okay, Rabbi Meir Kahana became militant as a teenager. He went to NYU, this guy. This guy went to NYU, all right? And then he went to Mir Yeshiva in Brooklyn. He got ordained as a rabbi. And then he started to teach in the 60s. And then he started to give rallies, to talk and give speeches and give rallies. He is the founder of the JDL, okay? He founded the JDL. So when you hear the word JDL, you got to connect it to Rabbi Meir Kahana. Listen to what he's going to say. Okay. He says here that the Jew is weak and vulnerable, and we will change it to one who is a mighty fighter who strikes back fiercely against tyrants. Right? He is the one who exacerbated black and Jewish tensions in New York City. Okay. And he is the one who coined the phrase, listen to this, never again. Okay, this phrase that everyone says, the JDL, his organization, is what coined that phrase. Okay, and he says every Jew a 22, meaning no more pacifism. You have to have 22. It's a gun, right? You have to have one. So he's a type of Orthodox person that, you know, like you have Salafi jihadi. He's a type of person that says, this is the book. We got to act upon this. People have to die. Blood must be spilt. Okay. His actions were deemed criminal. What did he do? He first, what is his first crime that he committed? He got arrested for plotting to bomb the Dome of the Rock. And he said, this will end all peace treaties with the Arabs, and it will incite a full-on war with the Arabs, in which will decimate them all. And he was found guilty of that, all right? That he wanted, he was plotting to blow up the Dome of the Rock. This is a terrorist, okay, by our definition today. His family moved to Israel in 1971. He founded a military anti-Arab Kash political party. The party's platform called for the annexation of all conquered territories. No Gaza, no West Bank. Forcible removal of all Palestinians. Okay? And he was jailed on several occasions. He was the first Jew in Israel to be accused of sedition. Kahana ran for Knesset and lost in 76 and 80, but won in 84. And his movement continued to grow. All right. The Koch party was banned from running, all right, by the Labor Likud coalition. All right. What's going to happen in the future? All these followers of this crazy man here are going to become sort of whitewashed, cleaned up. They will join the Likud. They will go to law school. They will become governors. They are very powerful. They're very powerful in the world today. Okay, in Israel. And the more powerful this group gets, you can bank on it, there's going to be religious war. That's what they're inciting. Okay? Now listen up. He made it to the Knesset. They then banned his party completely, saying that the whole platform incites racism and war. 2 years later, 1990, he was assassinated. Okay? But his message was, they must go. They called it a magnum opus. It's compared by liberal Jews to Mein Kampf. Okay? He also founded the Yeshiva of the Jewish Idea, a seminary there in Jerusalem. And until today, it promotes his ideas that the Arabs must be killed. They have to be killed. They have to be forcibly removed. And he says that is the only way for Israel to survive. If you want to understand where the settler, the biggest force, okay, behind all the sort of violence that's going on, you must understand Rabbi Meir Kahana. Let's read more from, by the way, today I'm only reading from Jewish sources, all right? Right out of the horse's mouth, as I like to say. Some people would, obviously, if we read it from a Muslim source or an Arab source or what have you, it's going to be something that's you could be accused of, you know, they're not going to be the fair ones, but let's go to the Jewish source. Now, by the way, the liberal Jews, they despise him as much as anybody else. They're embarrassed from him. Kahana's followers. Now, let's see, what did Kahana's do? This is not just words. They have murdered dozens of people. They have injured hundreds, and they have numerous violent attacks. Who was his follower? Baruch Goldstein. Baruch Goldstein went to the masjid in Khalil and he shot up, he's a Brooklyn Jew, 46 Muslims while praying Fajr. Okay? A elected official in our world that we live in, an elected official today in Israel is quoted as calling him the sweetest Jew that I have ever met. Baruch Goldstein. Okay? Rabbi Meir Kahana's main enemy at the time was Yitzhak Rabin. Yitzhak Rabin came up, eventually became prime minister, and Kahana died. Who killed Yitzhak Rabin for being a reformist liberal Jew that was making peace with Arabs? Kahana follower. So Meir Kahana's follower killed, is the one who killed Yitzhak Rabin. Yitzhak Rabin today gets no love. And Kahana followers, they have shifted the day of in which Yitzhak Rabin was honored. They actually do a pilgrimage to Kahana sites instead of Yitzhak Rabin. All right? The movement in his lifetime was shunned and marginalized. But every decade, more and more of the followers that he has rise up. Okay. Now let's take a look at some of his sayings here. Non-Jews will be obliged to assume duties, taxes, and slavery. If the non-Jew in Israel, this is what he's saying, does not agree to be a slave and to pay taxes, he will be forcibly deported. Every non-Jew in Israel, okay, will not be allowed in the jurisdiction of Jerusalem. Every non-Jew who has a marital relationship with a Jew, 50 years in prison. A Jewish prostitute or a Jewish male who has an affair with a non-Jewish male, 5 years in prison. Okay. What else did he say? I will not hurt any Arabs because there will be no Arabs to hurt when I'm finished with them. His sayings are so extreme. That's how he got such a radical following, because he's so extreme. All right, let's go to Rabbi Meir Kahana's sayings, quotes, okay, and to see how wild he says. Okay, let's pull this up. Here you have Robert Friedman, looks like a liberal Jew, writing it's like a hit piece on him, like how embarrassed he is. Okay, this one, they're blocking it. Where is the site that here? Quotes from Meir Kahana quotes. All right, if you ever hope to rid the world of the political aides of our time, the rule must be clear. There is no dealing with terrorists. Kill them all. Okay, love has its place, as does hate. Okay, peace has its place, as does war. What are these, the nice quotes? No, I'm looking for the juicy ones. Okay. It is time for the Jews to consider finishing their job. What is that supposed to mean? Okay. Someone here is putting up all the nice quotes. Now we need, where was it that I had, I hate when this happens. The wild quotes that this man has that they pull out. In any event, we're stalling here. All right, we're stalling here. Let's, I'll check out one more tab. If so many tabs open, you lose it. In any event, this is the political guy. This is like the Theodor Herzl of the supremacists almost. He is the founder or the spark plug, I should say, of this extreme. Now, there can't be a spark plug like him. He got killed. People think he's crazy. But there is another rabbi who is the purely spiritual and religious brand wing of the same ideology. And he's the one who justifies it, writes the books, teaches for decades on end. And he is, just like Kahana is like the political spark plug, this one here, Ovadia Yosef, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. Do I have his picture up? Did I send you his picture? Can't remember if I did. But why don't you just look it up and see if you can put it up. Rabbi Ovadia Yosef is one of the, he is the most revered rabbi of the last generation. Ovadia Yosef. And he's Sephardic in his origin, that's why he dresses a little bit differently. Okay. He died back in 2013. He was the biggest halakhic scholar. His funeral was massive. Okay. All right. And his Torah knowledge is considered at the top. He is the number one type of Torah scholar in their world. You know, of course, I'm sure someone will differ with that. But it's almost like saying, if someone was to say like, yeah, like you're just talking about the biggest, well-known, respected scholar in his time, all right, of the Torah. But he had this same philosophy politically, and he used his knowledge to justify this as Rabbi Meir Kahana, the idea, and that's why I'm saying it is true. The truth of the matter is that if you just take the Torah as it is, the Jewish religion as it is calling for this genocide. Look at what he says. Okay. He holds, again, that the Arabs have to be fought. The non-Jews cannot be left. They must be eliminated from the land. Okay. He says, the purpose of Gentiles. What is the purpose of Gentiles? To serve Jews. He's one of those who espouses this idea. The purpose of Gentiles is to serve the Jews. Goyim, Gentiles, us basically, were born only to serve us. Without that, they have no place in the world. Their sole function of the Gentile in the world is to serve the people of Israel. In Israel, death has no dominion over them. Now, by the way, I'm sharing this. I do want to share other views, okay? But we want to go straight to the Orthodox and then branch out. In Israel, death has no dominion over them. With Gentiles, it would be like any person. They need to die, okay? But does God give them longevity? Why? Imagine that one's donkey dies. What happened? You lost your servant and your wealth, all right? The Gentile is the servant of the Jew, all right? This is why he gets a long life, so he can work for the Jew. Why do we need Gentiles? They work, they plow, they reap, and we will sit like an effendi and eat. That is why Gentiles were created, all right? When did he say this? October 2010, weekly Saturday night sermon, all right? Only 13 years ago. On making peace with Arabs, what does he say? How can you make peace with a snake? Those evildoers, the Arabs, okay? It is in the Talmud that God is sorry that he ever created Ishmael and his sons. All right. On Muslims, they're stupid. Their religion is as ugly as they are. He said this in 2009. And that's like just a side comment, really. That's not theology. But when your biggest theologian says these types of things, all right, let's look at a little bit more about Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. So point is, what I'm telling you here is that Rabbi Meir Kahana is the spark plug. But who is the rabbi who lived, settled in Israel, no controversy, and put a lot of fuel, a lot of students, a lot of rabbinical, graduates, and really gave a scriptural basis for all this? Is Ovadia Yosef. Okay? Ovadia Yosef. Okay, let's read a little bit more. He's the foremost Talmudic authority of his generation. He was born in 1920, died in 2013, and he's Iraqi. He's originally Iraqi. He was born in Baghdad. His name in Arabic is Abdullah Yusuf. At the age of 4, right, Yusuf immigrated to Palestine and settled in Jerusalem, so he's Israeli, essentially. At the age of 20, he became ordained as a rabbi, all right, from Ben Zion Ozio. This is Isned, I guess. In 1945, he was appointed as a judge of the Sephardic rabbinical court in Jerusalem. In 47, at the invitation of Rabbi Aaron Shuk, he moved to Cairo, Egypt, where he was elected at the head of the chief rabbi of Egypt, all right? Then he published his books, etc., blah, blah, blah. And then he moved back to Israel in 1948. He moved back to his where he was raised in Israel, and he was part of the big rabbinical court, all right? There, from 58 to 65, he held the same position in Jerusalem. So this man, his CV, you know, is massive. He has a massive CV. In 65, he was appointed as a member of the Supreme Rabbinical Court of Appeals in Jerusalem. All right. In 65, he attained the role of the Sephardic chief rabbi of Tel Aviv and Jaffa. Right. He was awarded the Israel Prize for Torah Literature in 70. Look at the CV. Okay. In 73, Chief Rabbi of Israel. Oh, he got appointed. Okay. By a majority of 81 to 68 votes, replacing Yitzhak Nassim. Sounds Lebanese. All right. And he became a mentor to the Shas party. All right. So that is the CV of this rabbi. Okay. All right. Now, what is the main contribution of this rabbi? I tell you right now, what is the main contribution of this is that him and his sons, they ended up essentially his sons trying to, and his followers taking this stuff into law, trickling these teachings into law. These followers of him and Kahana going, trickling these ideas. And let's go now to our first video of his son. Okay, now this is Ovadia Yosef's son. What did his son do? He said, let's be more practical. Let's get into politics and change the laws. So what are some of the laws that they changed? They changed laws that basically saying racist and genocidal behavior. Let's see, more racist than genocide. Not this one, the other one. Yeah, that one. When justified religiously, should not be deemed racist at all. Okay, should be outside this. Okay, so let's take a look at what his son Yaakov Yosef has to say. And you're going to see David Sheen on the left, Meir Kahana on the right, and then Ovadia Yosef's son on the right. All right, go.
Okay, and in fact, they did pass this law and making it illegal to incite racism, but Yaakov Yosef worked to make sure that Kahana would still be able to. What he did was he tinkered with the law so that there was a loophole in it. And the loophole said, well, if you're justifying this racism that you're inciting by predicating it on religious arguments, then it's okay, you have an exemption. As long as you have a religious argument to support your racist argument, then you get by, you aren't punished for your incitement. So that we can thank Yaakov Yosef for. Another classic example, he was one of the rabbis who openly endorsed the King's Torah, a book that came out about a decade ago. This book, it's essentially, as Max has written about, essentially a Gentile baby murdering manual, I'm sad to say. Amongst the texts, here's a quote from the book, for example, there is justification for killing babies if it is clear that they will grow up to harm us. Okay? Now, these aren't only words on paper. These words have effect. The reason they write these words is so that people can carry them out, and that's what happens. That's what happened in the village of Duma when followers of the Kahana movement firebombed the house of a family and killed, burnt to death in their beds, father, mother, and one-year-old baby, the Dawabsha family. All right? So This is Yaakov Yosef, and he's loved and praised and held up as a hero in his community. He's not marginalized. So he's a classic Kahanist, sure, and that shows the symmetry and the synthesis between the Kahanists and the Shas party. But now it's out in the open. If before it was masked, now the mask has fallen.
Okay, so we have to know what's going on in this society because you got to keep tabs. This party, they're extremely violent, all right? So again, it's Kahana, the political spark plug, but too radical, a bit too crazy. Now you got Ovadia Yosef, the esteemed rabbi with a CV that goes down to 2 feet down, okay? And he supports and upholds, and his son also, the King's Torah. Now, the King's Torah is like, I guess, a tafsir, all right? This tafsir is extremely dangerous, and maybe it's the accurate tafsir of the Torah, okay? Or what they call the Torah, all right? And it states here that children should be killed, all right? Children should be killed. And they're acted upon it. And who is a student of Ovadia Yosef? Right here in Queens, 50 minutes from us. On YouTube, his lecture is there in which Rabbi Mizrahi, is a student. Put this one up. He's a student of Ovadia Yosef, okay? And he is clearly a Kahanist, murid of Ovadia Yosef. That's what his biographies all say. And again, in this lecture on the Amalekites, Amalek, he justifies what's found in the king's Torah, that children should be killed. Why? Because chances are they're going to grow up to be like their parents and not just kill Arabs. If they don't kill Arabs, they'll support killing Jews. They'll fund it. If they don't fund it, they're happy about it. They're all terrorists and their kids are terrorists. And he justifies it from the Bible. Okay? So we can see a link here. So this is not just one wacky rabbi. Mizrahi is not some wacky guy. He's not the extreme. Ovadia Yosef is the most celebrated. His funeral was the most widely attended rabbi in Israel. And he upholds the king's Torah. He believes this. His son is highly supported in Israel and is upholding this. These people have tons of followers who are acting upon this stuff. The settlers, they go back to these types of people. Let's see what Rabbi Mizrahi and why YouTube keeps this stuff on online. Well, it's good for us for we can see it, but it's insane. Let's listen to him here.
But the point is right here that Hashem say, do not have mercy on the children. Kill all their children also. Why? There's no difference between them and their children. In 10 years from now, these children will attack you on the way. Hashem knows, God knows. Now, if you know it, there's a terrorist in a building, and this terrorist will kill many Jews. It's just a matter of time, because that's what he does all his life. And there's an opportunity to throw a bomb on his head. But maybe a few Arab kids will get hurt. And they say, well, the kids are innocent. How are you going to kill 2, 3, 8 kids that are there in a building? They're going to get killed. So the answer is, if you don't kill those supposedly innocent kids, what would happen later? This one would kill 50 Jews. So is it permitted to kill this terrorist because I want to save 50 of my brothers and sisters that for sure will die from his hands, as he does all the time, in a price that innocent kids will get killed? That's a question. But those who would tell you, of course, will give you an excuse. So anyway, these kids are brainwashed to become terrorists. And if they're not actively terrorists, they support terrorism with their money. And if they don't send money because they're poor, they dance on the roof of their buildings when Jews are getting killed. One way or the other, they're your enemies. So now the question is, they will become terrorists one way or the other. So that's what the Torah say. Someone is on the way to kill you now or in a year from now. You can kill him even now, a year before. You don't have to wait a minute before. You know this person will kill you. Statistically, that's what it always constantly repeats. So you're allowed to go and attack him first. But it's already becoming a serious argument. Because it's human rights, is how can we be so cruel? Let's wait until the danger is really, really physical. What makes you think? Maybe they'll die naturally. Maybe they won't attack us. There's a lot of question marks here. I agree. But the point is right here that Hashem say, do not have mercy on the children. Kill all their children also. Why? There's no difference between them and their children. In 10 years from now, these children will attack you on the way. Hashem knows. God knows.
All right, you see, people. When we're citing Mizrahi, he is not in the minority. He is not a fringe quack. This is becoming mainstream in Israel. And it's the Kahana movement supported with this rabbinical scholarship, the biggest name of which is who we just said, Ovadia Yosef, supported now by, continued, I should say, legacy by his son Yaakov Yosef. They cite from the King's Torah. I'm assuming this is Tafsir, the King's Torah. The King's Torah was written by Yitzhak Shapira, okay? Another big rabbi. It's very hard to now look at the numbers of supporters that they have, okay? And start to say, nah, this is a fringe group. Most Jews are... I'd like to think that they're, you know, just practicing what's reasonable of the Torah, okay? And what their gut doesn't sit right with, it doesn't seem right. No, this is not the case. Let's take a look. Let's take a look at what they did. I'm going to read you a story here of what the followers of the King's Torah, of what Rabbi Mizrahi says, what he's a student of Ovadia Yosef, and Yitzhak Shapira's, you know, work and tafsir, okay? I'm reading here from Reuters. This was back in a couple years ago, okay? In Lod, in Israel, A Jewish settler was found guilty of racially motivated murder by an Israeli court on Monday in a 2015 arson attack that killed a Palestinian couple and their baby in the West Bank. All right. The deaths of 18-month-old. What did the rabbi just say? Okay. They're children. Why is he going to grow up to be a terrorist like you or support the terrorists? That's what he's saying. As if they had know the unseen. The death of 18-month-old Ali Dawabsha and his parents, Saad and Rehem, contributed to a surge of Israeli-Palestinian violence. Okay. The ensuing investigation and the prosecution of Amiram Ben Uliel also laid bare fissures within Israeli society, with some ultranationalists, these guys, challenging the state's handling of Jewish suspects. Now, listen up. Yeah, this next generation of Kahanists, what do? They become lawyers to defend people like him, to change the laws. Israel's Shin Bet Counterterrorism Agency hailed the verdict handed down, which carries a potential life term, prison term, as a landmark. Ben Uliel was 25. He plans an appeal. His lawyer said that the interrogators extracted a false confession from him. Okay. What did he do? He firebombed the Dawabsha family home and another dwelling in Duma after spray painting revenge and long live the King Messiah. Okay. He was acquitted of a charge of belonging to a terrorist organization. He was clutching a Jewish holy book. Ben Uliel sat slumped in the dock as the verdict was read out. Israeli media quoted his wife saying he was with her on the night of the Duma and he was innocent. It was pretty clear that Amiram would be convicted of acts that he confessed to but did not commit. Okay. The Shin Bet issued a statement that defended its methods as lawful and hailed the verdict as an important landmark, blah, blah, blah. Still, Palestinians see Israel as sluggish in cracking down on Jewish militants. Unfortunately, here's the thing. The only Jews that we could ever talk to are the practicing Jews who are, like, somewhat practicing. Even the liberal Jew, you can't talk to him. He's spreading all sorts of other facet, opposite side of the spectrum. These are the Hollywood Jews and the facet ones, okay? A second underage defendant in this case entered a plea. And I know it sounds, I'm generalizing here, but I'm saying here that the liberals tend to, in their politics and in their social, beliefs about the world, be at another extreme that we can't deal with. Okay, what did another guy do in response to this King's Torah teaching or Deuteronomy teaching? They went out for after one of these lectures, says David Sheen, kidnapped a Palestinian boy, okay, went to the gas station, opened his mouth and poured gasoline in his mouth, okay? Then lit him on fire. And the fire went from his tongue all the way back through his throat down into his stomach. And that's how he died. All right. Now let's put up let's now talk about the King's Torah a little more before we put up what another person said. West Bank settlement leader Yitzhak Shapira, this is the author, was arrested by Israeli police on this day in 2010 on suspicion of incitement to violence. Several months after the publication of his book, Torat HaMalech, Torat al-Malek, basically, the King's Torah. What did the book do? It defended the killing of non-Jews who are uncompassionate by nature in order to curb their evil inclination. Okay? If we kill a Gentile who has violated one of the seven commandments, they believe that there are seven things that we have to do to maybe get to Jannah. There's nothing wrong with the murder. Okay? Even babies and children of Israel's enemies may be killed. That's what it says right here. It is clear that they will grow to harm us. Quote, anywhere where the presence of a Gentile poses a threat to Israel, it is permissible to kill him, even if it is a righteous Gentile who is not responsible for the threatening situation. the liberal Jews, the common sense Jews in Israel, they're against this stuff. Okay, they're fighting this stuff hard. Listen to what it says. Endorsers of the book include Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, son of the Sephardic chief Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, Rabbi Dov Lior of Kiryat Arba. Okay, now listen to this. This is funny, actually. I'm going to now turn to the isnad of our guy here in Queens. Who are his shiuch? Okay? Who are his shiuch, his teachers? He learned and he studied under the biggest names, the exact names that we had here, okay, that who he studied under. He studied under, let's get his biography, his personal biography, okay? Should have had it earlier, right on the right spot, okay? He studied under, here it is, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, okay? And, where is it? There. Dov Lior. The biggest supporters of this book, the King's Torah, which is encouraging or permitting the killing of the kids, all right? Killing children. The disturbing philosophy expressed in Torah HaMelech, Torah al-Malik, emerged from the fevered atmosphere of a settlement called Yitzhar, located in the northern West Bank near Nablus. Okay. Shapira leads the settlement's, okay, yeshiva, holding sway over a small army of fanatics who are eager to lash out at the Palestinians tending to their crops and livestock in the valleys below them. One of Shapira's followers confessed to murdering two innocent Palestinians and attempting to kill the liberal Israeli historian Zev Sternhell with a mail bomb, and is suspected of many more murders. They hate the liberal Jews more than they hate us. He also planned an attack on the Tel Aviv Gay Community Center. The arrest of Shapira led to no prosecution, however, and was widely condemned in the Haredi community as a violation of free speech. Since the publication of Torah HaMelech, the King's Torah, what does Netanyahu say about it? Okay. He has avoided of criticizing any of its contents. And he has not criticized any of the author's leading supporters. He has not touched Yitzhak Shapira, okay? Nor has he touched any of his supporters. He won't say anything bad about them. Like Trump refused to condemn the KKK. His weakness stems from the fact that the religious national right figures prominently in his governing coalition. Okay, in his they're essentially all of these people who would have been in a sane world called crazy whack job extremists and murderers and ISIS. They are now infiltrated the Likud party. Okay, for Netanyahu, a confrontation with these rabid rabbis would amount to political suicide. So Netanyahu has essentially capitulated to them. Okay. Or it would force him to an alliance with the centrists who do not share his commitment to the settlements in the West Bank. Whose word is this? Jewish Currents, Max Blumenthal. I told you I'm going to go or going all Jewish sources here. Now let's put the last picture up. And I want to ask everyone, before we say who it is, if you've seen this face before. I just want to know if you've seen, because I've seen this face. I never really knew much about it, about this guy. Who here has seen this face before? Okay. Miscellaneous wants to remind us all that Trump did condemn the KKK. Eventually he did, when he didn't really need their numbers. Now listen to this. You see this guy right here? I've seen this face a lot, and I just keep scrolling. This is the number one. It's one of the strongest politicians in Israel, and he is a full-on, dyed-in-the-wool Kahanist, Ovadia Yosef, King's Torah, but with the shaved beard and the tie and the New York look, and that you can, you know, see him walking down Wall Street in New York, and okay, just another Jew. No, this is one of he is all right. Their biggest speaker, their biggest politician, and his movement is his power is growing. All right, if you're on Instagram, hop over to YouTube, Safina Society. Okay, let's read a little bit because now we're at the end of the tree here. We started with Kahana. We went to Ovadia Yosef. Ovadia Yosef's student down here. And how is that video on YouTube? Right? How is Mizrahi's video? I'm happy it's on YouTube because we can get it. But how is that not incitement? Okay? Now listen to this. Itamar Ben-Gvir didn't go to the rabbi route. Didn't go the political agitator route. What did he go? And we're going to wrap up here because we got to go. And Omar's late to class. He's going to fail the semester because of the stream. He's got Arabic class. Now, listen, we're going to read this and leave. An Israeli lawyer, far-right politician, okay, coming with the suit and tie and the shaved face. He serves as what? Minister of National Security. All right. He is a believer in this stuff. He is a member of the Knesset and leader of the Otzma Yehudit. He is a settler. And he lives in Israel-occupied West Bank. Has faced charges of hate speech against Arabs. And was known to have a portrait in his living room. Of who? Israeli-American shooter, mass murderer Baruch Goldstein. Who killed 29 Palestinian Muslims and wounded 125 others in Hebron in the 1994 Cave of the Patriarchs massacre. Before entering politics, he removed the portrait. That's your guy. Okay? Having a portrait of Baruch Goldstein in his room. What website is Wikipedia? This is not some anti-Itamar hit piece. This is Wikipedia. He also previously was convicted for supporting a terrorist group known as Kach, which espoused Kahanism. He was convicted for supporting Rabbi Meir Kahana and his ideology. Okay, he is fully one of them. All right, he is part of he is the leader in the Otzma Yehudit, Jewish Power Party, which espouses Kahanism and anti-Arabism. And they won 6 seats in the 2022 Israeli election. Keep your eyes on this group. If the more they rise, the more there's going to be violence and war. They want a religious war. They not only want Gaza and the West Bank, they want Iran, Egypt, Turkey, Iraq. They want all of it. They're quotes. All right. He is represented as the most right-wing and hard-line government, all right, in Israel's history, right, this current government, because of this faction. He has called for the expulsion of all Arab citizens. Okay. Ben-Gvir is widely known for his support, his openly racist anti-Arab views and activities. And the U.S. is giving money to a country. This thing has not been quashed. They're now they have power over the Likud, their big party, right-wing party. They have their own extremist party, right? And it's growing. This is the group that's growing. The moderates are not growing. This group is growing. Hey, look up where he is. See if there's any vanilla, you know, interviews that make him look like some nice guy. All right, Ben-Gvir has been long accused of being a provocateur, okay? Having previously led several visits to the Temple Mount as activists and members of the Knesset contentious marches through Jerusalem's Muslim quarter and set up an office in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, which witnessed several evictions of Palestinians. Well, who do you think is behind it? This dude. This guy. You know, on 3rd of January, he visited the Temple Mount. Oh, guess who is also a... Remember that disgusting looking guy in the t-shirt who stole the home. And the Palestinian woman is like, what was she saying? She's like, you know, Yaakov, you are in my home. He said, if I don't steal it, you still don't get it back. Someone else is going to steal it. He's very closely connected to this group. It's all a small country with smallest nets. Okay. Someone's asking, what's the name of this group? The philosophy is known as Kahanism, based on the extremist political thinker Rabbi Meir Kahana, which I'm telling you, they do have their basis in the religious books for this, which is calling for the elimination of all Arabs by any means, murder, killing, war, and including killing their children. Rabbi Meir Kahana was the first person we mentioned. The second one was Ovadia Yosef, the big scholar, originally an Iraqi Jew, born, you know, lived all his life in Palestine. CV, you know, longer than anyone else in rabbinical positions, judge, what have you. Him and his son, or his son, is the big supporter of the third person that you need to know, Yitzhak Shapira, and his famous tafsir, the King's Torah. This is the book that explicitly tells Jews, you are permitted to kill anyone you suspect of being against you, including their children. And we have here in Queens, who's all over YouTube, Rabbi Yusuf Mizrahi, who we've been citing, is one of them, their students. He's from that tree. He's from that isnet, okay? From that mushrab. And we just put his video up. If you didn't see it, you can go on YouTube, rewind back a little bit of this, and you can see that he says, he's quoting Deuteronomy, he's quoting the war against the Amalekites as being applicable to the Arabs. Do not have mercy for their children. They're going to grow up to be terrorists just like them. Okay, or enemies to the Jews. Itamir, okay, as a lawyer, what did he do? He defended Kahanists. As a lawyer, he defended these Kahanists. Okay. He visited in 2023 the Temple Mount, where Al-Aqsa Mosque is located, spurring an international wave of criticism that labeled his visit provocative. Okay. His father was born in Jerusalem to Iraqi Jewish immigrants. How many Iraqi Jews do you think are in Israel? A handful. Okay, not that you're not going to be in the millions for sure. The whole country is not even millions, right? Barely a few million. These guys are all connected. These are all like one little community. Do you know, like, the imagine the Jersey Muslim community. Imagine the Chicago Muslim community. Imagine the Dallas Muslim community, right? You go there, you step in Chicago, within 2 minutes, everyone knows everybody, right? It's not, everyone is connected to each other by 1 or 2 degrees. He's an Iraqi Jew, Ovadia Yosef, Yaakov Yosef, the King's Torah. It's all connected like a small little community, okay? Anyone who's from Jersey here, right? Let's take an example of Imam Qatanani. You may never have known him, but you've seen him. I guarantee you, you're 1 or 2 links, probably 1 link removed from him. If you want to get in touch with him, you can get in touch with him. Just ask any of your friends on WhatsApp. Hey, anyone know, have an inroad to Imam Qatanani? Yeah, within 20 minutes. That's how their community is, a very small community, right? So they're part of the Iraqi Jewish little group within Israel. Very close to Ovadia Yosef and his lineage of scholars, and he is a Kahanist. His mother is Kurdish Jew. And what was his mother? What was his mom? His mom was an active member in the Irgun as a teenager. What is the Irgun? The number one, most extreme terrorist organization that is responsible for the most vicious attacks of the Nakba. Okay, why don't you look it up? Go. His mom is probably on interviews. Okay, Itamar Ben-Gvir mom, an Irgun, all right? And she became a homemaker, all right? He, in the first intifada, his parents were sort of secular, but in the first intifada, he had an awakening, and he started affiliating himself with the Kahana Chai Party, okay? So as a young guy, he got involved with Rabbi Meir Kahana's ideas. Okay, and it was designated as a terrorist organization. All of these extreme fringe wackos have become whitewashed and are now in suits and ties, and they are in heavy in Israeli politics. Okay. He became a youth coordinator for the Kahana Party. Okay. Kach and Kahana Chai Party. And he was detained at the age of 14 for his extremism. Right? Well, why is this person in society at all at this point? When he came of age, he signed up for the IDF at 18. I mean, they all have to, right? But he was exempt from service due to his extreme right political background. Ben-Gvir continued his work with the Kahanist movement. Okay. Otzma Yehudit, Jewish power, is said to be the ideological successor. So like ISIS came out of Al-Qaeda, this group here. Otzma Yehudit came out of the Kahanist Kach movement. So what did he do? He probably polished it a little bit. Let's make it a little more appealing to or palatable to the world. When forming his party, he claimed that it would not be a Kahana splinter group. All right. He carried out a series of far-right activities that have resulted in dozens of indictments for violence. In 2015, he claimed to have been indicted 53 times. Okay? But Kahanists have become lawyers now, and they got him off. They keep getting him off. He said he was not, all the charges are thrown out of court. Okay, he has been charged most recently in 2007 for inciting racism. You see, before October 7, we were all saying, you know, Israel's falling apart. Yes, because the Kahanist movement and these types are rising up. And the liberals are getting more and more liberal. The Tel Aviv Jews are getting more and more liberal. And they're going opposite ways. They even, the former head of the Supreme Court is a guy from Harvard. They asked him, Israel is partly Jewish state, partly democratic state. Which one do you support? He said, fully democratic state. They asked him, do you believe in God and the Torah? He said, no. Just like David Sheen said, go back earlier to this. There are four types of political, Jewish political thought is four types based on two questions. Is the Torah from God? And is it applicable today? The Jews were accustomed to dealing with, and they're okay. When we live, we could talk to them, live with them, are those who say, yes, it's from God, but nah, it's not applicable. Let's either ignore some of the laws or change them, okay? That's like the mild Orthodox. Let's just ignore it. Deuteronomy says kill them all. Ignore that, right? Or find a way. The Ben Shapiro types, right? They're surviving in society. Then you have those who say, no, it's not. It's not from God, and it's not applicable. Those are your complete liberal campus campus, Hollywood, New York, Tel Aviv. This group says it's from God and it's applicable and we're going to do it. Right? We're going to go out there and do these attacks. And they did attacks. Okay. So his political career is that he was started as in the parliamentary as an assistant and blah, blah, blah. We can continue this later, but he is now their main, their biggest, most popular, most successful, whitewashed guy. And here, Ben-Gvir, I'm looking here at the Wikipedia page. He's very close to Netanyahu, apparently. And Netanyahu can't say anything. All right. He's one of the people who took part in the 2022 Sheikh Jarrah clashes. Okay. In 2022 Israeli legislative election, his party had unprecedented success. And he's growing and growing. In 2023, of this October, this month, following the arrest of five ultra-Orthodox Haredi Jews for spitting at Christians. You saw that? This group, spitting at Christians. It's a small country, right? It's a small little world. I'm telling you, if you, as a Muslim in New Jersey or Chicago or Dallas, have navigated your community, you have any influence in your community, you know you're up and down, Israel is no bigger than that, right? Literally, probably just maybe a little bit bigger than that. So all these things that we keep seeing, it's all connected. And you saw that picture. Maybe next time we'll show you the video. Them all spitting on the Christians outside the churches. Ben-Gvir says this is not a criminal case, right? They were practicing ancient Jewish custom. Wow, what a custom. Okay. All right. There you have it, folks. That is a quick entry into the world of Israeli politics. What's happening? We will keep tabs. We will keep tabs, more tabs on this, learn more about it, okay, and see how unfair, how crazy our society is here in the United States, that these people espousing killing kids, their offspring, their lineage, scholarly lineage, Rabbi Yusuf Mizrahi, is on YouTube. No, he's saying it. Play it one more time. I know we got to leave, but just play it one more time. You just can't believe this is being said on YouTube, right? And nobody says anything about it. And I'm happy it's on YouTube so we could see it, right? But this is the concept here, that we are in a world where if that group keeps rising in Israel, there's going to be more and more war. Guaranteed. Okay? Guaranteed. One more time to see this clip. You can see it for your own self. If you just joined us, look at this clip. And this is not an
anomaly.
The point
is right here that Hashem say, do not have mercy on the children. Kill all their children also. Why? There's no difference between them and their children. In 10 years from now, these children will attack you on the way. Hashem knows. God knows. Now, if you know it, there's a terrorist in a building, and this terrorist will kill many Jews. It's just a matter of time, because that's what he does all his life. And there's an opportunity to throw a bomb on his head. But maybe a few Arab kids will get hurt. And they say, well, the kids are innocent. How are you going to kill 2, 3, 8 kids that are there in the building? They're going to get killed. So the answer is, if you don't kill those supposedly innocent kids, what would happen later? This one would kill 50 Jews. So is it permitted to kill this terrorist because I want to save 50 of my brothers and sisters that for sure will die from his hands, as he does all the time, in a price that innocent kids will get killed? That's a question. But those who would tell you, of course, will give you an excuse. So anyway, these kids are brainwashed to become terrorists. And if they're not actively terrorists, they support terrorism with their money. And if they don't send money because they're poor, they dance on the roof of their buildings when Jews are getting killed. One way or the other, they're your enemies. So now the question is, they will become terrorists one way or the other. So that's what the Torah says. Someone is on the way to kill you now or in a year from now. You can kill him even now, a year before. You don't have to wait a minute before. You know this person will kill you. Statistically, that's what it always constantly repeats. So you're allowed to go and attack him first. But it's already becoming a serious argument. Because it's human rights. It's how can we be so cruel? Let's wait until the danger is really, really physical. What makes you think? Maybe they'll die naturally. Maybe they won't attack us. There's a lot of question marks here. I agree. But the point is right here that Hashem say, do not have mercy on the children. Kill all their children also. Why? There's no difference between them and their children. In 10 years from now, these children will attack you on the way. Hashem knows. God knows.
Not loony, not extreme, becoming very, very mainstream. And in the rabbinical world, in Israel, this is the dominant thought. When you see babies being killed, Palestinians, it's all connected. Okay? These ideas are what's fueling it. We'll continue our study and discovery of this world in the future, bi'idhnillahi ta'ala. And for now, we have to wrap up. We got to go. Jazakum Allah khairan. I see you all telling me, address, please address Sheikh Asrar, Sheikh Hamza Yusuf. All right, maybe we'll do that tomorrow. Subhanakallahumma wa bihamdik. Nashhadu an la ilaha illa anta. Nastaghfiruka wa natubu ilayk wal asr. Innal insana lafi khusr. Illa alladhina amanu wa amilu s-salihat wa tawasaw bil haqq. وتواصوا بالصبر والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله قلبي شفاه